The U.S. healthcare system operates with perverse incentives. As a result, healthcare organizations can't easily sustain themselves by working to keep people from using the services they offer. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Robert Huckman, a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Professor Huckman has co-authored a perspective article about the challenge of making the delivery of health, not just healthcare, a sustainable business, as part of the journal's series on the corporatization of U.S. healthcare. Professor Huckman, what variables affect the margins and the financial viability of hospitals and physician practices in this country, and how have organizations tried to influence those variables?
Well, Stephen, at its root, there are three variables that affect financial viability, and this is truly oversimplifying, but perhaps not too dramatically. There's the revenue that hospitals or physician practices receive per unit of care they provide. There's the cost per unit of care that they provide. Obviously, they would like that revenue to exceed that cost by some margin. And then the final variable is the number of units of service they provide. And those can be admissions of patients to a hospital. It can be office visits at a physician's practice. It can be diagnostic tests in a testing center. And those really are the three variables that at the heart drive much of at least the operating financial performance of hospitals and physician practices. Now, a lot goes into quality and the speed at which those services can be provided. So it's much more complicated. But from a financial perspective, the variables are pretty simple.
And then how do payment structures in the U.S. healthcare system drive misaligned incentives in which the profitability of hospitals and physicians increases when their patients become sick or sicker?
Well, the incentives set up in such a way that hospitals and physicians still largely get paid when they intervene on behalf of their patients. And what does that intervention typically involve? It's doing a procedure, having a visit with a provider, that is a physician or some other clinician, having a test performed. These are all, in many ways, either diagnostic or therapeutic interventions. They are units of service. If you want to think of them in their simplest form, you know, in a factory, we talk about generic widgets being made, and those are the units of service. Well, in healthcare, we're talking about humans being served here, but the services that they're receiving, those elements of care, are the units on which those providers are paid. Those providers are not necessarily paid on the units of health that they create for those patients. That is, in many ways, you could imagine if we're going to pay them on the basis of health, we'd want to pay them for not needing to do unnecessary procedures, for not having patients hospitalized when they have preventative conditions that could have avoided hospitalization, for not needing duplicative testing. Those would all be things that would be associated with keeping someone healthier, perhaps, or managing the upfront part of their care more effectively, such that we could avoid a lot of these downstream interventions.
So, in fact, what kinds of companies have tried to pursue business opportunities that involve keeping people healthy and out of the hospital? And have any of them been successful?
Many, many, many companies have tried to do this. You can imagine almost any chronic disease out there will have numerous digital health apps and the companies associated with them that aim to manage that chronic condition. This could be diabetes, it could be hypertension, congestive heart failure, whatever it may be. There are multiple businesses that are often trying to go at the challenge of trying to help patients manage those conditions in ways that keep them from needing more significant downstream healthcare interventions, such as admissions to an emergency department or other procedures or other visits with specialists. The challenge with these models is really one of thinking about who will write the check to these companies for the services they provide, these preventative services. The most likely organizations to pay for these services are payers. Those could either be insurance companies or large employers who provide healthcare coverage to their employees. And they are getting flooded with so many different models that are going after different conditions that it can be difficult for them to figure out which ones are truly going to move the needle on improving health and which ones happen to just be business offerings that may not actually impact downstream utilization or health. And so that's one challenge, is the payers trying to tease apart which of these are truly valuable solutions. The second piece is that very often to make these models very effective, they have to be integrated with the clinical enterprise, if you will. So integrated with maybe existing physician groups or health systems in a way that data can be shared with providers who can be available should these patients, after going through these preventative approaches, still get sick. And that does happen. And it does happen even despite excellent preventive care. It's just patients will still get sick. And they will, at that point, need to have more involved intervention, either from physicians or hospitals. And so integrating these upfront health-based models with downstream healthcare is also important for creating a seamless healthcare system for patients. And that can prove to be another challenge because those downstream healthcare providers are still thinking about how do I get more patients into my hospitals, into my surgical operating rooms, into my offices for office visits, which is how the existing system is paying them for the most part.
So speaking of integration, you say in your article that the challenge of keeping people healthy has been further complicated by underestimates of the complexity of integrating medical care with social supports. So what do you mean by that, and why is that integration important?
Well, this integration between medical care and social supports, or the social supports are often referred to as social determinants of health, is absolutely critical. And a lot of it comes down to very basic issues of execution and delivery of services. So a patient might be prescribed a statin for their high cholesterol. They might be prescribed lisinopril for high blood pressure or an anti-diabetic medication. And none of those will be useful if that patient is not able to get to the pharmacy to pick up that prescription. And so you might say, well, why can't they use one of the many services that will deliver to their home? Well, there are services that will absolutely do that, but those also require resources that many patients don't have. Those are not available to many of the patients who are facing this challenge of doing these things in person. So very often, those resources are certainly much more available to those who may already have the means of going to complete those transactions because they, for example, have a car, they have transportation, they have a job where they could take time off to get to the pharmacy during its open hours, whatever it may be. But that's just one example of a social determinant need, such as transportation, that is important. Other social determinant needs are things like broadband access. If one's going to actually offer a meaningful telehealth service to someone's home, that home is going to need to have reliable broadband access to make it effective. Same goes with food security and access to healthy foods, particularly in places that have otherwise gone at risk of becoming grocery deserts or pharmacy deserts, as they've been called. So we have numerous challenges here. And you, as you think about each one, you can very clearly see how it could get in the way of the delivery of very well-intended and potentially very effective healthcare services that can't make their way to the patient.
As you say, health and prevention are generally difficult to quantify and to monetize. How could the United States start moving toward models that reward health outcomes, not just medical care activity?
Well, you ask an excellent question, because the reason the healthcare system that we have to date compensates in the way it does, which is under a fee-for-service system still, at least in large part, the reason we have a system like that is because in many ways it's easy to measure what is going on. It's easy to measure the occurrence of a hospital admission or a surgical procedure or an office visit. The challenge with health is that if we're going to try to measure units of health being created, or in many ways we're trying to measure things that don't happen, that is the avoidable, the admissions to hospitals that are avoided, the tests that are not needed, the visits to specialists that are avoided because of adequate primary care. So in many ways, there's this challenge of how we pay organizations, professional organizations that are working very hard to help things not occur. And that's a real challenge for providing health. It's hard to think about it that way for me, because in many ways, we say, well, surely we should be able to solve this problem. And I think we are seeing organizations that are beginning to think through this. But what they're required to do is to look back and say, what are some of the determinants of providing health? And a lot of it comes back to managing particular biomarkers that are associated with chronic disease, such as keeping one's cholesterol down, keeping one's blood pressure under control, keeping one's blood sugar under control. All of the things that occur very often through a series of diagnostic tests that you might have during a primary care annual visit are the types of things that become the metrics we need to think about managing, as opposed to number of hospital admissions, number of surgeries, number of tests. Instead, thinking about what proportion of the patients you see have controlled blood pressure, controlled cholesterol levels, controlled blood sugar. And of course, we have to acknowledge the fact that patients are different genetically in many ways. And so we would have to do this at a high enough volume that providers wouldn't be at risk because they happen to get one patient with genetically high cholesterol that is just completely resistant to any statin intervention, let's say. So the key here is to think about ways we can do this across broad populations, but begin to reward, if you will, some of the markers of well-provided health that will hopefully reduce the need for unnecessary downstream intervention.
So finally, who will need to take the first steps to establish the business models that are aimed at keeping people healthy? Is it the job for commercial payers, policymakers, other stakeholders? Who's going to be doing this?
I think there are several parties that need to be involved. And to your list, I would even add patients themselves. But I think we first of all have to start with what you mentioned earlier, which is we need robust and validated metrics of health that can be tied to these upstream investments in healthy activities. The second thing we need is we certainly need to think about payment reform that will, in a more rigorous way, reward organizations for improving those health metrics, not simply delivering visits or procedures. Right now, we have many cases where organizations might be paid on a population health basis. That is, a certain amount for keeping a large population of patients in good health and managing their care accordingly. Yet many of the providers who work within that system are still getting paid on a fee-for-service basis. So we need to think about ways to make the way in which individual hospitals and physicians get paid match up with the way that their larger organizations that employ them are being compensated. We also have to find ways to generate cross-sector collaboration. And by that, I mean taking the existing healthcare systems, which are working very hard to deliver the best possible care for patients. I really do think that is largely the case for our existing healthcare system. But there could be ways in which they could work with other parties. And here I think of external organizations that have been trying to make their way into healthcare, such as retailers like Amazon and Walmart and Target, and large technology firms, whether it's Google or Microsoft or Amazon. These are organizations that have all wanted to make their way into healthcare. In many cases, their moves into healthcare have been sort of these stop-start kind of activities. They'll make investments and then they'll pull back from them. And then a couple of years later, they'll make new investments and then they'll pull back from those. But part of my hope is that we could find ways for that interest coming from outside of the typical healthcare industry to get paired up with the existing healthcare systems that are already serving many patients and find a way to let them work not in competition with one another, but more in partnership. Perhaps some of these technology firms could be excellent vendors to existing healthcare systems. I think of an organization like Best Buy in the retail space, which is paired up with many local healthcare systems to try to find ways to set up necessary technology in the home to actually facilitate remote care, both before someone even gets sick when they're trying to monitor a low-level condition to try to keep themselves out of the hospital, or perhaps monitoring them after they've been to the hospital and would otherwise be recovering, say, in a nursing facility, but can do this in a more cost-effective and higher quality way at home. And so these are all situations where if we could pair up the clinical expertise of healthcare systems with the customer service expertise of some of these retailers, or perhaps some of the technology expertise of tech firms, we might find some interesting solutions to these challenges.
Thank you, Professor Huckman.